The Local Administration, Federal Affairs, and Special Districts Subcommittee will come to order. Tamara, please call the roll.
Chairpersons Malika.
Here.
Representatives Amnesty, Anderson.
Here.
Bartleman.
Here.
Barrero, excuse, Brackett.
Here.
Daly.
Here.
Dunkley. Gottlieb. Griffiths.
Here.
Holcomb.
Here.
Schock.
Here.
McLean.
Here.
Clayton, excuse, Tuck.
Here.
Woodson.
Yeah.
Jarkowski.
Here.
A quorum is present.
Thank you, members. By your presence, we have a quorum. As a matter of housekeeping, for those on the committee and in the audience, please make sure your cell phones and other communication devices, including laptops, are turned off or placed in silent mode. And members, welcome back, and welcome back to your favorite subcommittee. Hey. We hope to have another very informative and productive year, and I look forward to working with each and every one of you. But before we get into today's presentations, we do have a new member on our subcommittee. The new member is also our new vice chair. Welcome, Vice Chair Brackett. And please say a few words to the committee.
Thank you. The slide down here is rough. Thank you, Madam Chair, for that. I'm glad to be here. Looking forward to working with the committee throughout the rest of the session, all the way through these committee weeks of the session, and looking forward to supporting you and what we have to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair. And you're in charge of that half of the room, and I'll take care of this one, and it looks like I have the easier half. Yeah. Well, today we have two presentations. First, we will have a presentation from the Department of Commerce on special districts. The department is responsible for the Special District Accountability Program, which maintains the official list of special districts and provides technical assistance. Meredith Ivey, Deputy Secretary of Community Development, will present on behalf of the department. In order to provide sufficient time, members, I ask that you hold your questions until after the end of the presentation, and then I will entertain both questions and discussion following the presentation. Ms. Ivey, welcome to our subcommittee. Please approach, and you are recognized to proceed.
Thank you, Chair. And joining me today is Jack Gaskin. He's our in-house subject matter expert on this topic. Thank you, Jack. Good afternoon, Chairpersons Malika, Vice Chair Brackett, and committee members. As the chair stated, my name is Meredith Ivey, and I have the pleasure of serving as Florida Commerce's Deputy Secretary of Community Development, which includes the Special Districts Program. Thank you for the opportunity today to speak on this topic. Pursuant to 189.12.6, a special district is a unit of local government created for a special purpose, as opposed to a general purpose, that has the jurisdiction to operate within a limited geographic boundary and is created by general law, a special act, a local ordinance, or rule of the governor or cabinet. A special district can be created for any special purpose other than as law enforcement. There are approximately 80 special purposes for which a special district has been created in the state, which are listed in our official list of special districts found on our website. Later in the presentation, I will provide you more information on how to navigate our website and database. A special district can be created for any of these specific purposes, again, except for law enforcement. Listed on this slide are the top 10 purposes for why special districts are currently being created in the Sunshine State. The list includes community development, housing authority, and soil and water conservation. Also, special districts can be used to finance, construct, operate, and maintain capital infrastructure, facilities, and services. Special districts may provide services when growth and development issues transcend the boundaries, responsibilities, and authority of individual municipalities and counties. More than half of all special districts in existence are community development districts established under Chapter 190 Florida statutes. Florida Commerce's duties to administer the program are outlined in Chapter 189 of the Florida Statutes. This chapter strictly provides Florida Commerce with the authority to enforce provisions that are specifically stated in the law. The program also provides technical advisory assistance as it relates to the provisions of the chapter. In 2014, Chapter 189 Florida Statutes was revised by the legislature in an effort to enhance accountability and transparency of special districts. In addition to the revisions, the legislature created the Special District Accountability Program, which is administered by Florida Commerce. The program includes measures such as requiring special districts to maintain an official website with detailed information such as their official specific purpose, revenue sources, budget, and meetings. The Special District Accountability Program is part of the larger Local Government Financial Reporting System, which is a network of state and local agencies that work together to gather accurate and consistent financial data and information from all governmental entities. This system is used to provide accurate and updated information to assist both local and state government leaders in making well-informed decisions. To ensure inclusion in the official list of special districts maintained by our agency, a newly created special district must submit their documentation to Florida Commerce within 30 days for verification of their district status. The primary entity responsible for overseeing a special district is the special district's own governing board. The governing board is responsible for ensuring that the special district complies with all applicable laws and conducts its business as authorized by its charter and adopted budget. Special districts are held accountable through the same oversight mechanisms as other units of local government, such as statutory requirements for reporting and governance of constituents. In certain cases, if a special district fails to meet a requirement, both state and local agencies, along with citizens, may take measures to address the issue. The oversight review process for each special district is outlined in their charter documents. The governing bodies of special districts vary depending on how the district was created and the creation document and/or the law under which it operates. The governing body may include elected members, members identical to a single county or municipality governing body, members appointed by a county or municipality governing body, members appointed by the governor, members based on specified positions. Special districts are governed by the Florida Constitution, laws of a general nature, the Special District's Charter. The specific statutory authority for the special district's purpose and Chapter 189 Florida Statutes, the Uniform Special District Accountability Act. As stated previously, this act requires special districts to comply with similar requirements for counties and municipalities. They have a website and put certain things on their website to ensure we all know what they're doing. Back to the transparency piece. Section 189.012 Florida Statutes defines two types of special districts, which are dependent and independent. Both dependent and independent special districts are units of local government. An independent special district obtains its authority directly from the community that they serve through a governing body that is independent from other government agencies. The community holds the board of an independent special district accountable. A special district is closely tied to another unit of local government, typically city council members, a county's elected board members, or their appointees serve as the board of directors for a dependent special district and control the district's budget, management, and operations. On this slide, you can see that there are nearly 2,000 special districts that exist in Florida, making it a very common unit of local government in the state. And approximately 80 new special districts are created annually. These tables provide a breakdown of dependent and independent and also single and multi-county special districts. These figures are maintained on our official list of special districts on the Flower Commerce website through our database. To pay for the operations of a special district, there are several different types of funding sources. Special districts often generate their own revenue to pay for projected growth, such as providing additional services, facilities, and infrastructure without requiring all other taxpayers to pay. In other words, only those who benefit from a special district have to pay. Some of the common revenue sources include taxes, user fees, government-funded, which includes local, state, and federal, grants, tolls, investment, donations, sales and leases, and private enterprises. Also, through the Special District's Accountability Program, Florida Commerce is responsible for the official declaration of an inactive special district. A special district may be declared inactive if one of the following criteria is met. The district notifies the department in writing that no action has been taken by the district for 2 or more years. The district notifies the department in writing that it has not had a governing body or maintained enough members to form a quorum for 2 or more years. The appropriate local general purpose government fails to respond to an inquiry by Florida Commerce within 21 days. The department determines that the district has failed to comply with the filing requirements of Section 189.066 Florida Statutes. The district has not had a registered office and agent on file with the department for 1 or more years. The governing body of a special district unanimously adopts a resolution declaring the special district inactive and provides documentation to Florida Commerce to that effect. To declare a special district inactive, Florida Commerce must publish a public notice in a newspaper local to the special district. Any member of the public may file objections within 21 days of publication pursuant to Chapter 120 of the Florida Statutes. After a special district is declared inactive, it cannot collect taxes, fees, or assessments, and the entity that created it is responsible for dissolving it. Board of Commerce does not dissolve special districts. Currently, there are 15 inactive special districts in the state. Florida Commerce provides resources regarding special districts on our website, www.floridajobs.org, listed under the Community Planning, Development, and Services section. Using the sidebar, select the Special Districts tab, which will direct you to information on the Special District Accountability section. Listed under the Special District sidebar, you can navigate to the official list of special districts. This section offers information about individual special districts, as well as county and statewide data. Once you are on the official list of special districts webpage, you can access information about the list, visit the web pages of each special district in the state, and create a customized list of special districts using your own variables. Do customizable searches. The searchable online database provides the most up-to-date and uniform information available about Florida special districts. The information available on the database includes each special district's official name, its registered agent, and registered office, its independent or dependent status, its special purpose, the county or counties in which it has a territory, and its official website address. Thank you for your time, and Madam Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Ivey and Mr. Gaskins, for being here. Members, I will open it up to questions or points of discussion for our friends from the Department of Commerce. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you both for being here. You were so informative. Whoop. Representative Woodson, well, you're recognized for a comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's not a question for you.
Representative Woodson, hold on one moment, and I want to thank Ms. Ivey and Mr. Gaskins for being here. I will release you from the podium. You can go sit down. And Representative Woodson, you are recognized for a special recognition.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I really appreciate the opportunity. At this time, I would like to take just a few minutes to acknowledge my elected officials from the city of Hollywood. My mayor, actually, Mayor Josh Levy, who is in the back. Welcome to the House. We really appreciate you being here. And he's with about five commissioners, Commissioner Carol Shuham, Commissioner Tracy Calari, Commissioner Gruber, Commissioner Bitterman, who is my sitting commissioner, and also the, yes, thank you. Commissioner Edelma Quintana, she's over there. I was looking over here. And also we have the city manager, Josh Geller, the assistant city manager, Adam, and also Lisa. Raylan. I'm sorry, I just got your last name wrong. They are all here from the beautiful city of Hollywood, so I would like to acknowledge them. Would you please stand up so everybody can see you? Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much. And this is an amazing team, actually. I'm proud to be living in the city of Hollywood, and we have done some wonderful work together. It's great to see them here advocating for the city of Hollywood. So thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Oh, welcome, Mr. Mayor and Commissioners and management. Thank you for coming all the way up here to Tallahassee and sitting in on our subcommittee today. Welcome.
Thank you.
Members, next we are going to switch gears a little bit, but still talk about special districts as we take up our second presentation. Florida Statute 189.0695 provides for performance reviews of certain special purpose independent districts. Today we will be discussing the fire control district performance reviews. These reviews were first due this year. Actually, they were due this July, but please note that for any of the fire control districts that were within 50 miles of where Hurricane Ian made landfall, they have until January 1st to submit their performance reviews. These reviews started this year and will continue every 5 years hereafter under the statute. The Office of Program Policy Analysis and Government Accountability was tasked for the performance reviews for fire districts located in rural areas of opportunity. Today, we will hear about those reviews that OPAGA performed. Emily Leventhal, Staff Director, will present on behalf of OPAGA. Again, members, we ask to hold your questions or any items of discussion until the conclusion of the presentation. Dr. Leventhal, you are recognized to proceed and welcome.
Chairperson Zmalika, Vice Chair Brackett, committee members, thank you so much for inviting OPAGA here to discuss our research. I'm joined by Chris Hilliard, who is a member of the research team on all of these reviews. Today, I will run through the statutory charge of our projects. I will tell you at a very high level what OPAGA found and recommended, and the bulk of the presentation will be about the findings from the three reports. Florida statutes specify that OPAGA must conduct reviews of independent special fire control districts in rural areas of economic opportunity. That's a state designation for rural communities that have been adversely affected by economic events that are quite extraordinary and natural disasters. There are three of these fire districts, Argyle and Liberty Fire District in Walton County, and in South Florida, Immokalee Fire District in Collier County. Argyle and Liberty are volunteer districts, and Immokalee is a paid fire department. For this review, statute directed OPAGA to review materials from four fiscal years. Our review began of materials in 2019, that's local fiscal year 2019-20, and went through 2023. They specified that OPAGA examine these issues when we reviewed a district. First of all, governance, how the elected boards are running the districts and how well. Services, what services are the districts providing? How many of those services, and do they duplicate with any other entity? Performance, How well is the district really doing against national standards, their own standards, and end-user satisfaction? And then finally, resource management and planning. That includes financial trends, how finances affect their operations, and whether or not they respond well to audit findings. Now, these are just three of many fire districts in the state, and two of them are outliers, possibly, in terms of having limited resources available to them. So Apaga kept that in mind when we considered what optimal performance could look like. To do these reviews, Apaga conducted a number of interviews with the districts and stakeholders in their areas. We did file reviews and site visits and a number of information requests. The next two slides preview the entire rest of the presentation. I'll take it at a high level. Both Argyle and Liberty Fire Districts are not in compliance with statutes related to special district administration. And the majority of volunteers in both those districts appear to lack certifications that would allow them to enter the hot zone of a fire. In addition, in Liberty Fire District, Opaga observed governance issues that have a pervasive negative effect on operations. In Immokalee, the primary issue that Opaga identified was that their expenditures were exceeding their revenues during the review period. In general, Opaga recommended that the Walton County districts work towards achieving statutory compliance. Opaga also recommended that all the boards continue to take steps to ensure accountability, improve and the extent to which goals are achieved, and improve efficiency and effectiveness of their operations. Finally, because of governance, service delivery, performance, and resource management issues, Opaga recommended that the legislature consider dissolving the two Walton County fire districts. I'll begin the detailed presentation with Argyle Fire District. And during the presentation, I'll give some background on a few key issues here. And so we'll spend a little more time on this district, and then the pace will pick up as I cover the other two districts. The Argyle Fire District is one of seven fire control agencies in Walton County in the Panhandle, and as we mentioned, it is a volunteer fire department. This slide presents some of its basic resource information. The majority of its revenues come from a non-ad valorem assessment on homes and businesses, $100 for homes, $300 for businesses, impact fees and grants. The district reported having 29 volunteers, but we never received a roster from them, so we're not sure that's the true active list, and they reported having 3 facilities and 11 apparatus. Not all of those apparatus are working. The district is not in compliance with several statutory requirements related to special district administration. During the review period, the board had not routinely adopted a budget or developed a 5-year plan, nor does it maintain a website that contains required information. Moreover, it had no documentation supporting compliance with ethics, nepotism, and voting conflict statutes. In addition, at the time of our review, the district had not submitted its most recent statutorily required audit. Further, during the review period, the district did not address some critical matters related to administration, including updating their operating guidelines, some of which hadn't been changed since the late 1990s. But more importantly, they're not maintaining complete or electronic personnel records. They have no information on volunteers' basic state certification requirements, being a high school graduate, being a non-smoker, no criminal history. In addition, they had incomplete information on personnel that had completed courses and exams for the volunteer firefighter certificate of completion. This allows firefighters to enter that hot zone where serious harm can occur. Uncertified volunteers can help with equipment and water on the scene, and they can manage other service calls like lockouts, assisting invalids, or unauthorized burns. Next, special districts are required to follow some sections of state procurement law, particularly related to real estate and contracting, but not all sections. The Chapter 189 recommends that districts consider having procurement policies to cover some bases, and Argyle did not have such a policy. In terms of service delivery, Opaga received a few years of incident data from Argyle Fire District, and in general, incidents increased over the period of our review. So our next question was, well, what kind of incidents are they attending? Nationally, the most common activity of fire departments is not fighting fire. It is emergency medical services and rescue. That's closely followed then by more specialized services like hazmat incidents, fires, service calls, and then helping the neighbors or mutual aid. So we didn't approach analyzing service delivery at any of these districts with the idea that they would mostly be fighting fires, but we were surprised to see that Argyle Fire District was mostly responding to mutual aid incidents. This happened because the district has a limited number of certified personnel and no personnel that are certified to provide pre-hospital emergency medical care. Consequently, the County Emergency Services attends every fire and medical incident within the Argyle Fire District boundaries. Now, despite the level of interaction the district has with the county, some coordination issues are happening, and the county offered the district a $125,000 grant in exchange for improving some aspects of its coordination. Argyle Fire District has drawn down a very limited amount of that money and has not followed through on that coordination agreement for much of the review period. Neither the county nor the district have considered district consolidation to address inefficiencies. In terms of performance, district representatives reported having a number of established goals and activities, but these were neither board approved nor consistently implemented. In general, fire departments across the country and Argyle look at national standards as guidelines for considering their performance. These include timeliness standards and standards for the number of qualified personnel responding to incidents. It also includes ISO ratings or insurance services office ratings. These ratings affect consumers' homeowner insurance costs. Those ratings consider a number of broad issues, but not all of them are in a fire department's control. The ratings are based on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being the best. And Argyle's performance is mixed on all these ratings. They meet the timeliness requirements, but they did not for the number of qualified personnel responding. They reported receiving a 5 on their ISO rating, but didn't provide us with documentation to verify that. A 5 is relatively average across Florida and the nation as a whole. The district in general does not systematically assess performance, and for all of these districts, our review was pretty much the first time that they'd experienced this kind of performance assessment. In terms of resource management, because district representatives reported not creating a budget for fiscal year 1920 and being unable to locate a copy of their budget for 2020-21, the analyses that Opaga conducted were based on data from audits released to the Florida Auditor General. From this documentation, we determined that the district had total revenues of about $1.3 million and expenditures of about $984,000. We looked at expenditure details when the districts had it, and in Argyle, as revenues increased, so did expenditures on facilities, utilities, apparatus, and new equipment. Opaga also broke out costs into administrative and direct categories, and administrative costs increased at the district as well, and this was primarily for required software and for personnel. Opaga's analysis of resource management also considered a high-level look at staffing and equipment and facilities. Bottom line, the number of volunteers in Argyle aren't meeting requirements or the district's perceived needs. And district representatives reported that several apparatus and facilities need repair or replacement. The district's ability to fund these expansions is uncertain. They've seen some revenue increases in recent years due to development, but there's no security that those increases will continue. OPAGA recommended the district take a number of steps to make operations statutorily compliant and improve performance. OPAGA also recommended the district board and legislature consider additional steps to support effective and accountable fire and rescue in the district. Madam Chair, would you like me to pause here or to continue on to presenting findings about Liberty Fire District?
Please continue with the entire presentation, Dr. Leventhal, and we'll hold our questions until the end after a review of all three districts. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving down the road, literally, to Liberty Fire District. Liberty Fire District occupies a neighboring segment of Walton County, a similar number of residents and slightly lower assessments, $75 for a home, $163 for a business. The district had a slightly larger budget than Argyle last year and has two stations and 18 apparatus. 14 of these may be operational. The Liberty Fire District is not in compliance with several statutory requirements, some similar to Argyle, but also some additional issues that we identified in our review. The district has not routinely adopted a five-year plan or appropriately adopted budgets by resolution. The board has also not regularly filed meeting schedules, made meeting records available for public inspection, or maintained a public website. Nor has it obtained relevant bonds, verified its compliance with ethics, nepotism, and voting conflict statutes, nor submitted its most recent audit. It's also not addressing some administrative matters that are affecting its operations. Same issue with personnel records and training documentation. They are paper and not often complete, so they can't determine at any moment which volunteers are certified to respond to particular incidents. In addition, when OPAGA conducted its file review on site, we found documentation for two volunteers in their files that should have exempted them from active status. Similar to Argyle, Liberty has no board-approved procurement policies, and they should consider updating their operating procedures. During the review, OPAGA received multiple allegations of the chief and assistant chief misrepresenting data, including two ISO, the number of functioning apparatus, and two FEMA, the number of persons attending incidents for FEMA reimbursement. Further, during the review period, the board chairperson resigned and has not been replaced, and this creates oversight gaps. The fire chief had not been properly certified during the review period, and the board chair vacancy leaves the board open to voting impasses, most notably when the board made a motion to dismiss the assistant fire chief, who is on the board. The assistant fire chief voted for himself not to be suspended, and then because the vote was tied, the assistant chief still attended board meetings. Similar to Argyle, overall, the district experienced increasing call volumes. However, similar to the nation as a whole, they reported attending mostly rescue and emergency medical calls with a small increase in mutual aid incidents. The district also has a limited number of certified personnel to fight fires, so and EMS services, so they may need some help on some of their calls. County staff respond to every fire and medical incident within the Liberty Fire District as well. During the review period, the district left a grant from the county on the table and did not follow through with a coordination agreement. And the county and the district have not considered consolidation to address related inefficiencies. The district doesn't have specific goals and objectives to direct its program and activities. It doesn't measure its effectiveness. It considers national standards and meets the national standard for timeliness, and its ISO rating did improve during the review period. But the district doesn't collect feedback on its performance, and local stakeholders had a number of concerns about the accountability of their operations. During the review period, the district's annual revenues did not cover expenditures, and both expenditures and revenues decreased. The assistant chief instead used surplus funds from prior to the review period to cover the difference, and the board was unaware that they were operating in this manner. OPAGA looked at their direct costs, and the largest reported direct cost was for insurance and then maintenance, but without actual budgets, we're not sure whether those costs were managed or paid. The district also reported that administrative costs increased, but again, didn't provide documentation on particular costs, notably salary and FEMA reimbursement costs. District staffing decreased over the review period, but they felt that their staffing was adequate. However, they reported the condition that some of their facilities and apparatus didn't meet their needs, but their ability to fund their goals is uncertain given the downturn in their revenues. Despite the magnitude of the differences on some of the issues, OPAGA ended up making some of the same general recommendations to Liberty Fire District and to the legislature as we did for Argyle. Here, let me stand back and say that some of the challenges experienced by these two districts are unique to them, and some of them are common to fire departments across the nation. National studies show that incident volumes are increasing and that volunteer fire departments are continuing to struggle to recruit volunteers and struggling financially. Madam Chair, I'll continue to discuss Immokalee Fire District. As OPAGA traveled south to Immokalee, we encountered a very, very different organization. Immokalee services the unincorporated communities of Immokalee and Ave Maria and the surrounding residential and agricultural areas of Northeast Collier County and contract fire services for the Seminole Reservation and Casino. Unlike the Walton County districts, Immokalee is supported by ad valorem tax revenue and they are at the maximum millage rate. They had a budget of $11.4 million in the last local fiscal year, the review period. They are a professional fire department. During the review period, the majority or all of the firefighters on staff were salaried employees, and they have paid administrative staff. And now for a break in pattern. The district is in compliance with statutory requirements related to special district administration. OPAGA identified a few issues that came up with the review period. The paper personnel files, some data entry lapses that resolved, and a need to update their operating procedures. District incident volume also increased in this district during the review period, while the number of personnel remained constant, so an increased workload overall. Here, district operations and county emergency operations overlap and are complementary. The district relies on county agencies for dispatch and emergency medical services, while the district supports the county with non-transport capabilities and basic life support. The firefighters at Immokalee Fire District have an array of specialized certifications, including being EMTs and paramedics. Local stakeholders have historically discussed consolidating the fire agencies throughout the county, but the district didn't see a benefit or a need for that at the time. In the past year, the district established many, many goals and objectives, but it lacks performance standards for some of these, so they couldn't identify how well they were doing on those just yet. They also consider some national standards for timeliness and personnel. They are not meeting those, and the district's insurance rating worsened over the review period. This happened because they closed a facility and sold a truck to pay staff salaries. The district has not assessed local stakeholders' perceptions of district performance, but we did not hear concerns from outside stakeholders. During the review period, district expenditures totaled $44 million, exceeding revenues of $41.2 million during the review period. During this time, revenues from taxes and impact fees increased. District representatives reported that expenditures increased over revenues over the past 2 years due to startup construction costs for the new station and taking on debt for replacement apparatus. The district was able to utilize impact fees for the new station, but they can't utilize those for maintenance or for personnel expenses that increased over the review period. Administrative costs also increased, most notably for legal and audit services. The district reported three factors that have historically constrained their tax collection. First, the lower appraised values of parcels in the district, particularly in Immokalee. And second, a limited tax base. 55% of the properties within the district are tax exempt because they are church-owned, schools, federal housing, or nonprofit developments. Moreover, they may only collect a portion of the casino's fee payments. The rest is slated to go to Collier County. On other resource issues, OPAGA identified that Immokalee's staffing resources are lower than communities of comparable size. In addition, during the review period, staffing and facilities did not meet the district's needs. As we noted, one station closed during the review period. They developed a plan to address their future resource needs, but they are not sure that they will be able to fund it with their current revenue streams. OPAGA recommended the district board take a number of steps to improve administrative accountability and performance monitoring, including developing a strategy to manage their budgets. Madam Chair, I am sure that we are all delighted that that concludes my prepared remarks. We would be happy to respond to any questions you may have.
Thank you, Dr. Leventhal. And before I open it up to questions, members, I want to note again that every independent fire control district was required to have a performance review conducted this year and submit those by July 1st, with the exception of the extension granted until January 1st, 2024 for those districts impacted by Hurricane Ian. So here we heard the details of the performance reviews conducted by OPAGA themselves for the three districts that were in rural areas of opportunity, but every district has or will be submitting a similar performance review. So just keep that in mind. You might want to check out what's happening with the districts in your backyard as well. And with that, Representative Bartleman, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. Can I ask, like, two questions?
You are recognized for two, yes.
Thank you. In terms of the, I want to just clarify some things from the two, actually, maybe a couple, because I have to clarify because the other presentations were later.
You are recognized for a series of questions.
Thank you. I just want to get permission. You said that the last district was unincorporated. Were the other two districts unincorporated as well? Part of the unincorporated, or were they part of the county?
Dr. Leventhal, you are recognized.
Representative, I believe that part of the areas in Walton County that were contained within the districts are unincorporated areas.
Okay, so the other district?
In Immokalee, yes, the unincorporated areas of Immokalee and Ave Maria. As far as I could take that, I think.
Okay, thank you, Chair. So then my next question is, in terms of the safety of the people, you referenced that one district will call in county fire staff. The other two, in terms of safety, when it comes to medical issues, fire safety issues, is there some sort of backup, or are they just... what's happening in those communities?
In Argyle Fire District and in Liberty Fire District, the county dispatches themselves to those calls to ensure the safety of residents. In Immokalee, the county dispatches all calls and may attend the calls if emergency medical services are needed. We are not currently under the impression, I believe, that Collier County responds to fire incidents in general in the Immokalee Fire District, only if EMS services are needed.
And this, Chair, this is my final question.
You're
Thank
right
you.
Next.
Okay, because they're unincorporated, especially the first two that have major deficiencies, if you dissolve them, the county would have to assume that responsibility, but they're not part of the county. So how would, who's paying for their fire services if you dissolve this? Do you see what I'm saying? Like if the unincorporated county became absorbed into a municipality or a county, then they could have an ad valorem tax to help with that. So if you just dissolve these, Is that going to be the burden on those two counties, or who's going to fund this very important service?
You're recognized.
Representative, if the legislature chose to dissolve those two fire districts, the legislature could also set provisions for the dissolution about how the assets and the responsibilities of the districts would be absorbed, eliminated, or additional ones created.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation and thorough review.
Representative Tuck, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Dr. Leventhal, thank you so much for the presentation. And my question actually piggybacks on Rep. Bartleman's question, because I have four fiscally constrained counties. And the Liberty and Argyle studies will definitely be, you know, mirrored in my fire districts as well. So when it comes to the study that you all did you have any data about whether these areas could absorb the effort that would come from dissolving the fire districts? And if so, how much would it cost? Is it possible? Because I know that's going to be a major conversation when my studies come out as well.
You are recognized.
Representative Tuck, when we asked questions about consolidation, we asked if the county or any cities had done related studies and how much they thought it would take for them to take on those services. In this case, the counties were mostly noncommittal about that, and they didn't have specific numbers. I will only say that in Walton County, the county generally indicated they were already showing up, you know, that there was already a sunk cost there. So we did not receive any specific evidence or counts of what that impact would be and did not assess that directly.
Yes, and Representative Tuck, when I did some research on these issues, it was my understanding, too, that every call was responded to by one of the county entities, regardless of the volunteer special district. As well, I know that was important for residents of Walton County to know that they are being served and that fire services are being provided to them. Representative Holcomb, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to have a couple questions, if you don't mind. So we had a fire district get dissolved in my county, and Argyle and Liberty would have looked like pretty good districts compared to this district, okay? Train wreck. You actually got reports, you got information, you would never have gotten that from this district. So everything that you read, I was having a flashback to say, you're not getting any help from them, bottom line. You're going to need 15 firefighters to show up to a fire. So if you're not getting reports on how many men and women are on duty in these stations, they're not helping. So the county's got to say, send all 15 people. We have no idea what's in this volunteer fire department. Do you know the history of why these two districts were created? I just looked them up on my phone. I don't see anything around the Argyle one that kind of is unique. The district in my county was on the water. It was a little bit separated by like a couple miles maybe, separated from some of the counties. So, and then same thing with Liberty. I didn't see anything. There's a lake there. I didn't see anything special that would cause the creation of these two districts.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Representative Holcomb. It's my understanding that both the districts were created by a special act of the legislature. I'd like to check with Mr. Hilliard. I am unaware of the legislature's intent at that time. If I recall correctly, at least one of them was created in 2003, and the other earlier than that. So I have no information on intent.
Representative Holcomb, you're recognized.
Yeah, I will just say that, you know, like I said, I see and hear the same things that with our district, and they actually got arrested for the delinquencies that they had, and it was just a total nightmare. So, unless you can point to anything that really is valuable, and I don't see that they're valuable, when you can't support a fire or an EMS situation. And I don't see any deficiencies to the community since the county is already there, and that's the way it was in our county. So will you be coming, I don't know the mechanics of this, will you coming back to us with that? Are we doing this as a bill? Madam Chair, if you could.
I will jump in, Representative, that OPAGA's duties were to facilitate and conduct these reviews and to provide us with this information. And that concludes their task on these particular performance reviews. So any policy matters or any other matters would be up to the legislative body as to what potential future action to take. And also, let me also mention that our Joint Legislative Auditing Committee always has a role to play when districts become inactive or if there are other issues that pop up as well, and please keep that in mind. Representative Bartleman, I'll get to you in a second, but first, Representative Woodson, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for your presentation, ma'am. You indicated during your presentation that you conducted site reviews, site visits, and we know, based on your report, that there are a lot of issues with those districts. However, any type of investigation or whatever you're doing, you need to look at the leadership. Why did you go straight to dissolution as opposed to a change in leadership? Because it all boils down usually to whoever is in charge, the administration of the district. So is there any reason that you went straight to dissolution as opposed to a recommendation for a change in leadership?
Dr. Leventhal, you're recognized.
Representative Woodson, that is absolutely something that we might consider in a situation where the leadership was not elected and all the board members in these fire districts were elected. And so that would be up to the voters whether or not they were willing to sustain current operations this way.
Can I follow up? You're recognized.
Okay, good. Thank you so much for clarifying that for me. But as far as Collier, which is the one that you are recommending for performance improvement, not to dissolve them, but for performance improvement. So what was the rationale? Because I'm pretty sure they both have almost the same issues. So what was the rationale for that?
You're recognized.
In Collier County, also an elected board, and we made a number of recommendations to management to make minor improvements and to really consider their budget strategies. And the districts were well aware of our line of reasoning and investigation and were allowed to respond and consider OPAGA's recommendations in a formal response to the report.
You're recognized for one more follow-up.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I really appreciate it. Let's just say if we decide to go with your recommendation, one thing that we want to ensure is for us to save those employees who work in this district, because that would be my priority. Mm-hmm. So what would be your recommendation? Is there a way for either other district to absorb the employees, or where would you recommend that they go? Let's just say if we decide to dissolve the district, the two that you are recommending.
Dr. Leventhal, is that something you have comments upon?
Recommendation.
Representative Woodson, what I could do is talk about other consolidation studies that I've seen. Other consolidation studies don't always save money because personnel are needed to maintain timeliness standards, and you need people in place to get to houses quickly with the right number of certified people. I can tell you that an implication of Walton County absorbing the responsibilities of these districts would be that uncertified volunteer firefighters would be unlikely to keep their positions unless they obtained the certifications that Walton County requires for its paid firefighters. Otherwise, they would not be eligible for employment. Does that make sense?
Can I answer about that? Yeah. No.
Yes, Representative, you can ask another follow-up, but just keep in mind that if there was, let's say, a special act regarding a consolidation or to dissolve a special district, that act itself can include numerous details as to how that would occur, and there would be other information that would need to be weighed at that time as a policy issue,
right,
if that's something that was ever brought before the legislative body. But you were recognized for follow-up.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. That was going to be, since she worked the report out, she was the one who came up with the report, I was trying to gauge her recommendation on how to handle that. So thank you so much. Thank you.
Representative Bartleman, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And I just have one follow-up in terms of discussion among my peers. Clearly, there's going to be something. We can't let this stand because of the safety of Floridians. That's, you know, it's an issue, and you can't have this happen. But my concern is whatever we do, if they're unincorporated, the county cannot impose, unless we do something about it, the same taxes that every other resident of that county is paying for their services. And right now, they're paying for it anyway for them, but it needs to be noted that one county collects $478,000 annually from the residents in that special district. I mean, one special district. The other special district, Liberty, collects $342,000 annually from the residents within that area of that special district. And if I was a commissioner or someone who lived in the county, you can't, if you're living and partaking in the services, those aren't free because everyone else is fitting the bill for those. So if we're gonna, even though they're absorbing it now because they need to, because lives are at stake, because this is so important, whatever we do, we need to speak with the counties, and we need to make sure that we give them the ability to levy whatever they need to take care of these costs. So that would be just my comment. When whoever's going to have these discussions, I think it's something they need to consider. Thank you.
Representative Holcomb, you're recognized.
I was just looking back at, I think it's Argyle, for their paid staff, are those like accountants, bookkeepers? Do you know what those positions are that are full-time?
You're recognized. Mr. Hilliard.
It was one volunteer coordinator and then two admin staff.
Do you know if that's the same for both volunteer fire departments? Do they have paid staff also?
They do the same thing, volunteer coordinator and admin.
Members, any additional question or any items of further discussion? Ranking Member Daly, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it's not specific to this presentation, but kind of both and kind of overall, having run local bills related to special taxing districts, having referred one of the special districts in my district to the JLAC with an audit report that's now been, is about to be released, I've delved in the special district space for a while, and I want to thank you and the speaker for the interest in this area. I mean, my understanding is, well, based on the presentation we saw, right, there's over 2,000 of these different types of districts across the state, and some of them do a great job and do good work, and some of them don't, as is the case with one of mine. And so I do think it's worth a deep dive. I do think it's worth a very in-depth conversation, because it's so important, whether there's duplication of services, whether there's districts that are not performing, that are not following the law. I mean, there are a lot of these districts that have existed for a long time, and a lot of folks don't know any different. Over the years, you know, prior to being elected, I was on the city commission, and the number of times I would have someone reach out to me because they had an issue with their water or something to that effect, and all we did was share a name with the district, right, or a similar name with the district. And so folks don't know, I think, by and large, that these districts exist or don't understand that they exist and that they're, in many cases, you know, wholly apart from any traditional, what, you know, I would consider a traditional government level, a city, a county, the state. And so I think it's a past time to have this conversation. So I really appreciate it and look forward to working on it.
Thank you, Ranking Member. Representative Holcomb, you are recognized again, and thank you for being so vocal this committee.
Sorry. The ranking member's comments, I want to echo that. And one of the problems, I think, in our county was, so let's say that they were relatively an active unit and working If they don't want to file the reports on time, or they file some reports that may be fictitious, and I don't want to be hard on volunteers, I'm not against volunteers, but in a situation that I saw, it sounds like these two folks are, if they're not doing their reporting properly, who's the policeman at the county that's watching out for this and saying, hey, your reports aren't on time, this is going to the administrator, the administrator's taking it to the Board of County Commissioners to really, you know, get on top of the things that aren't happening the way they're supposed to. And unfortunately, thank goodness, there was never a life and death situation, but some very unpleasant things happened when they showed up at times, and not professional, not doing the things they're supposed to be doing. So this can be a very serious situation when you're relying, the folks are in that area were relying on their tax dollars to go and provide them these services, and they weren't getting it. And so that's when the other boards, the counties, and us have to be and get involved to make sure that that's not happening in a fraudulent or malicious way. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Members, any additional questions or comments? We'll see none. Dr. Leventhal, Mr. Hilliard, thank you again for being here and sharing your detailed findings on those three districts, as well as your overall knowledge regarding looking at fire control districts, you know, across the nation, what to look out for in terms of red flags, and where there was areas of overlap in these performance reviews. I find that very helpful. So thank you for being here again. Members, next week we will be digging into a different type of independent special district. We'll be looking at the independent mosquito control districts. Their performance reviews were due in September of this year. They're all available on OPAGA's website. So if you want to take a look at any of them before next week's meeting, please feel free to do so. And we'll get an update on all of those performance reviews, as they were all facilitated by OPAGA. But thank you again for being here. Vice Chair Brackett moves that we rise, and without objection, the meeting is adjourned.